O spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave new patterns of truth and justice into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting. But now, in the center of our service and in the center of our lives, let us take a few moments for the quiet moments in our life. You may use this first part for lighting candles of hope or memory, or simply sit where you are, remembering who you are and why you are here. Please join me in an attitude of prayer. We come here with high ideals, hopes, and dreams. We call on the better angels of our nature and seek guidance. We come here seeking community. Grant us a clear vision of that community, the wisdom to know how to build it, and the strength to do the work that is necessary. We come here seeking understanding. May we learn to understand others and thereby find new ways to see ourselves, better ways, more expansive ways. We come here seeking acceptance. May we learn to accept others. We come here seeking consolation. May we learn to console. We come here seeking answers. May we find the right questions. May we learn to live fully, love deeply, and laugh earnestly, today and always. Amen. The title, Living in Interesting Times, came to me a couple weeks ago when I checked my email at 7:30 on a Sunday morning and saw an email that Carrie Evans had sent me on Friday saying she needed a blurb for the newsletter for this service by 8 o'clock Sunday morning. So I didn't have a lot of time to think. But as a point of fact, I've been trying to decide for a few months, ever since I agreed to do this service, what it was that I wanted to say to you today, but with no success. It seems a waste of your time to tell you what you already know. An original thought is pretty hard to come by, for me at least. Besides, given what all is going on in the world today, it's a little bit hard to focus. Since my most common reaction to things that I see and hear these days is to think, that's interesting, I figured I ought to be able to do something with the title. So here we go. When it comes to the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, it's probably an eternal curse, at least for some portion of the population. All times are interesting in the cursed sense for those who are struggling to get through them. In all times and all places, there have been those for whom life is a struggle. I believe that part of our mission as people of faith should be to stand with those who are struggling and spread the word that none are free until all are free. For most of history, the many, the have-nots, have been oppressed by the few, the haves, whether it be money that they have, power that they have, whatever. There have been brief times in history, at least in some places, when this was not the case. And those times and places are viewed with great admiration and a good bit of nostalgia. It was Republican Rome, not Imperial Rome, and Democratic Athens that our nation's founders looked to for the basic structure of our government. Respect for the individual and a sharing of power are the cornerstones upon which this great country was built. Most of what's going on today has little to do with the ideas upon which this country was founded, blustery rhetoric to the contrary notwithstanding. When thinking how I might best frame the argument that I want to make today, I looked, as usual, to my major prophets, Emerson and Thoreau, for ideas. I remembered Emerson's remark that once you expose a lie, you have dealt it the mortal blow. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. The lies, damned lies, and statistics being used by power mongers of today have all been exposed for what they are, and yet they live on. Thoreau's ideas on civil disobedience were put to good use by Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., but I'm not really sure how to apply them to the circumstances of today or to my life. What we have today is a multifaceted attack. It's multifaceted of both in terms both of who's attacking and who's being attacked. It's divide and conquer warfare taken to a new level. As Dr. Lohr has pointed out many times from this pulpit, fundamentalists of all stripes hate the same things. They hate the wide range of sexual orientations that are a natural part of the human condition. They hate women who think they have a place in the world outside the home. And they hate individual freedoms. That is to say, freedom to decide matters of conscience for oneself rather than adhering to the prevailing orthodoxy. The primary tools being used by those who want to control our world are the same as they've always been: military power, money, and religion. And since we're in church, it's probably appropriate to talk about religion, so here goes. We all know what the fundamentalists are saying, but what is the true message of the religions for which they claim to speak? Lately, I've been reading the works of the Hebrew prophets quite a bit. It can be rather tedious, what with all the extended descriptions of what God is going to do to the Jewish people, the destruction of cities, tearing down of gates, plagues, and all. I ran across a wonderful quote by a Christian minister. He told the story of a child that had been asked what he thought of the New Testament, and the child's reply was, "God was more interesting back then." I like that. I think the reason that we love quotes from children is because they really are unalloyed truths as seen through innocent eyes. And the God of the Hebrew prophets was very active, almost always angry, and full of ideas for ways to take his revenge. There's a fairly consistent pattern with the writings of the Hebrew prophets that almost always begins with a statement of God's complaint against his people. It's usually idolatry or worshiping another god, but almost as often, it's about the neglect and use of the poor and the oppressed. After a detailed description of the punishment to be delivered, there's usually a description of how life will be once the people are reconciled to their God. Our responsive reading this morning was an example of the good life described. And remember that the ancient Hebrews were henotheistic, they were not monotheistic. They didn't believe in one God, they just believed that their God was the right God for their tribe. But back to the complaints God had against his people. Amos complains that the leaders are selling the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes, that they have tread upon the poor, afflicted the just, taken bribes, and turned away the poor at the gates. Micah said, "Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it because it is in the power of their hands. And they covet fields and take them by violence." This all sounds a little too familiar, doesn't it? In chapter 6, Micah tells the people exactly what is expected of them: to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God. In this country, of course, the dominant religion is Christianity. It's fundamentalist Christians who are trying to determine how we are all to conduct our lives. So what did Jesus, the young and fearless prophet about whom we just sang, have to say? Hopefully you got a little reminder by singing the hymn. But let's look at Mark chapter 12, verses 28 to 31. Y'all are going to get more Bible quoting this morning than you've had in the last year. "And one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, 'Which is the first commandment of all?' And Jesus answered him, 'The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, The Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. He also had something to say about the practical application of these commandments. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus tells his disciples about Judgment Day and what, according to Jesus, is going to be the accusation leveled against the damned. I was hungry, and you fed me not. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was in prison, and you visited me not, etc. The disciples asked when it was that they saw him hungry and thirsty and imprisoned, and he answered by saying that by failing to do this unto the least of my brethren, they had failed to do it unto him. Now here's an interesting thing to consider. Jim Rigby, the minister of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church here in Austin, was recently called to a disciplinary committee to answer on his position on gay rights for speaking out against the discrimination that is being openly practiced and promoted by people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, people who no more represent Christianity than Osama bin Laden represents Islam. Reverend Rigby had the temerity to cite Matthew chapter 25 and asked those sitting in judgment of him who they thought in our time would qualify as the least of these. Who is it that is being used and oppressed these days? He was informed that he was not allowed to cite Scripture in his defense. Now that's interesting. There are many good Christians in the world who are trying to practice the religion of Jesus as opposed to the religion about Jesus, and trying to promote the teachings of Jesus that include loving others, caring for others, defending the poor and the oppressed, abstaining from judging others, and striving to build a community based on compassion and love. Sid Hall, the minister of Trinity United Methodist Church, has been a tireless advocate for gay rights, including the right to legal marital status. He has refused to perform weddings, and he vows never to perform another wedding until his church grants him the authority to perform civil unions or religious ceremonies for gays and lesbians within his congregation. And my friends Mark and Mary Lett, they're longtime, very active members over at Trinity. They came to a social gathering a few years back, and Mark was grinning from ear to ear, and we asked him what he was so happy about, and he announced that Sid Hall had been thrown in jail, and he couldn't have been prouder. So we, of course, wanted to know what Sid had been thrown in jail for, and it was because he had been part of a contingent that disrupted the United Methodist Church Council of Bishops, protesting their stand on gay marriage and the ordination of gay ministers. So down the street at Trinity, they're working on this. Larry Bethune, the minister of University Baptist Church, has been a vocal supporter of gay rights. That church chose to withdraw from the Southern Baptist Convention, or conference, that is, rather than be told that they could not appoint a gay man as deacon. Jim Wallace, an evangelical Christian minister and the founder of Call to Renewal, has argued that discrimination against gay people and the abuse of poor people have nothing to do with true Christianity. I recently read his book, God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. And I don't agree with his theology. Having been raised Church of Christ, I have a particular problem with the we're right and everybody else is wrong mentality. But he understands the teachings of Jesus, and he promotes the very best that Christianity has to offer. So what about us? For those of you who are unaware, this is a Unitarian Universalist welcoming congregation. What that means is that the members of this congregation jump through a lot of hoops to prove to someone at the UUA that we're an accepting bunch, and we welcome gay and celebrate gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons. We have a poster hanging in the lobby to prove it. It was designed by a friend of mine, Gwen Manny. Well, I don't say all that in order to belittle the effort that was made or the intent of the program. But to me, actually being a welcoming congregation is more important than being designated one. I said the same thing about our designation as a green sanctuary. It was the work that we did to get it, and not the certification that matters. But here's the rub. What one person finds welcoming is not always what another will find welcoming. Some gays and lesbians come here because they have been rejected by other churches. They come with expectations of acceptance and need to see some sort of evidence of that acceptance, and it needs to be something more than a poster. But what? There's got to be something more that we can do. I'm going to do a little aside here, and I don't mean to be peevish, but I personally have a problem with that part on the poster about celebrating gays and lesbians. Holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, school graduations, these are things to be celebrated, not people. Well, okay, it's all right to celebrate a new baby, because that's really a celebration of life, of new life. You may wonder why I have a complaint about this, and it is for the simple reason that I do not wish to be objectified. I don't appreciate being a pawn in the hands of power mongers who are more than happy to strip me of my humanity in order to promote their position. Neither do I want to be the token gay for someone to claim as their friend in order to prove up their liberal credentials. And I do not believe for one minute that this congregation does that, by the way. I wouldn't be up here if I thought it did. I attended a workshop at the Fall Southwest UU conference last fall where these issues were being discussed. And the people there were genuinely concerned with promoting understanding and acceptance within our congregations. But I was very uncomfortable with the way in which they wanted to accomplish this. There was this undercurrent of thought that would have put gays and lesbians in a spotlight, and I can't agree with that approach personally. When it was my turn to speak, I told the group that if one of them came to this congregation and asked multiple people to tell them about Don Smith, I would be surprised to hear that anyone mentioned my sexuality. I don't think it would come into the description of who I am and what my role is in this church. To me, that's what being a welcoming congregation is all about. I'm dealt with as a human being and not the reification of some psychological construct. At a board council retreat a few years back, we broke up into a number of groups to do a visioning exercise. We spent the afternoon talking about what we want this church to be, and every group expressed as a high priority increased diversity. The facilitator, having heard about our theological pluralism, was rather surprised. And he said, I thought y'all were a really diverse crowd. I thought that's sort of what defines you. And Dr. Laura said, yeah, we're a very diverse crowd of middle-class white people. There are good reasons to desire diversity within our church. How can we understand people of different cultures, races, sexual orientations, etc., if we don't have an opportunity to know them? And I mean really, truly know them. How can we hope to work together unless we know each other and understand the centers from which we operate, the unique perspectives we have because of our differences? And how can we hope to improve the world unless we can work together? The problem, then, is how to attract people of diverse backgrounds without objectifying them in the process. I wish it were easier, and I hope some of you have ideas, because, frankly, I don't. I've tried. I've thought about this. My friend Ivory Newsom and I had a conversation about this once. He didn't have any ideas either, but he agreed that he's not interested in being anybody's black friend. Before Alberto and I joined this church, I met with Marjorie Bowen Wheatley. This was back when people who wanted to join the church were required to meet with the minister. Marjorie and Clyde, for those of you who didn't know them, were our interim ministers before Dr. Lohr was hired. He is white, she is black, and they are married. Most of us can remember when that was not allowed in southern states. There were laws against interracial marriage designed, of course, to protect the institution of marriage in the same way that the laws they're trying to pass now supposedly are going to protect the institution of marriage. During our meeting, Marjorie asked me if Alberto and I ever experience prejudice because we're an interracial couple. She said, yeah, no. She said that even minorities can hold prejudices against other minorities within their group. Well, you could have knocked me over with a feather because it had never occurred to me that Alberto and I were an interracial couple. I don't think of Alberto as an Hispanic man. I think of him only as a human being, the human being I happen to be in love with. I hope that when I'm on my deathbed, he'll be beside me. But our government is working very hard to make sure that that can't happen. Apparently, it is a grave threat to the institution of marriage and civil society altogether for that to happen. Will we ever live in a world where such superficial things as race, color, sexual orientation, and economic status are irrelevant? Will we ever learn to deal with each other as human beings, as brothers and sisters, as children of God? I don't know, but I do know this. It won't happen unless we focus our energies on making it happen. How do we start here, now, in this church? I know that this sounds like a rhetorical question, but it's not. We need to talk. We need to make plans, and we need to take concrete steps. There's going to be an amendment on the ballot in the near future that, if passed, will write discrimination into the Constitution of the state of Texas. It serves no other purpose than to perpetuate hatred. We need to do everything in our power to defeat it and to expose the people behind it for what they really are. We have a chance to work together with people of all faiths, all races, all socioeconomic statuses. This work will take us outside of these welcoming walls and allow us to build new connections. And come to think of it, maybe that's how we welcome people of diverse backgrounds into this community. What do you think?